So this morning I'm going to look at the metta bhavana. So I'm going to say a few things about the practice, sort of a few tips how to do the practice. And then, well, we do the metta bhavana, but also lead through a particular sort of metta bhavana type exercise in meditation. I mean, much of what I say will probably be familiar to you, but it may still be useful just to hear it again. Also, I think metta bhavana seems to be the practice which many people find difficult for various reasons. Maybe a question of type, but I think some of the difficulties, I think, can easily be avoided. Yeah. I think the difficulties often come from doing too much or thinking too much in the practice. Maybe the first thing to say about the metta bhavana, it's sort of obvious, but it's worth mentioning. It's an other-regarding practice. It's not. It's the practice where we're not concerned about us. Yeah. I think it's good to mention that, because if you meditate and practice mindfulness, and even if you do metta bhavana, it's very easy to be overly interested in ourselves in a sort of not very helpful way. Yeah. So the ideal of metta is, in a sense, we're more concerned with, we're really so concerned with others that we're not bothering about ourselves too much, which is actually liberation. That's the aim. That's what we're trying to get at. So really, we're concerned with the welfare of all beings. So if you want to define metta, it's a strong desire for the welfare of all beings. That's how you define metta. In Living with Kindness, Bhante says metta is on these different subheadings in the first chapter. And one of them is that metta is a rational emotion. So he calls metta the emotion which is appropriate to reality. Yeah. So our emotions can be rational or irrational. Yeah. Fear of spiders is usually irrational. Yeah, because so there's irrational emotions, like fear of spiders, for example. Yeah. He calls metta a rational emotion. It's an emotion which is in line with reality. Yeah. I mean, I would even go so far as to say metta is the emotional equivalent of insight. Yeah. I mean, if insight is about non-self, what's a better way to practice this than not being concerned with yourself but concerned with others? Yeah. It's the emotional equivalent of insight. It's a strong goodwill, it's a strong wishing for the welfare of all beings. It's another aspect of metta, yeah, the strong volition. And also Bhante calls it can be an ecstatic emotion, in the sense it gets us out of ourselves. Ecstatic in the sense of getting us out of ourselves.
Yeah. Say that word again?
Ecstatic emotion. It gets us out of ourselves. And I sort of hinted at that, but just to remind us that the aim of the metta bhavana is not necessarily a nice, pleasant feeling. That's a byproduct. Yeah. The aim of the metta bhavana is a strong volition, which usually feels very satisfying, but the main aim is not to create a nice feeling in itself. That's a byproduct. So just to go through the stages, which is probably helps if I go through the stages to sort of try to explain how I would approach the metta bhavana. So you've got the first stage, which is the one many people find difficult, metta in oneself. I prefer the term feeling metta in myself rather than metta for myself. For me, it makes more sense. Otherwise, I have to split myself in two, send myself metta through some loop. Yeah. So maybe it's easier to think in terms of metta in myself rather than for myself. And I think the difficulties many of us have with the first stage have probably to do with a certain idea of what that should feel like, or a certain idea that we should have a certain high opinion of ourselves or something. Now, in a way, I think you can simplify the first stage very easily. And also, I suspect if you simplify our meditation practices, life would be easier in meditation. Yeah? So I think we just overcomplicate practices a lot. In the first stage, all we need to do in a way is being aware of the fact that we care for ourselves. This is inborn. You can, this is there. You don't have to actually create it. We have this incredibly strong urge for happiness. This incredibly strong urge to avoid suffering. We tend not to notice it if things go well. Yeah? But just notice what happens when there's a slight threat to you. Your health, your well-being, your comfort, you're on high alert. Yeah? It's almost this kind of self-cherishing is almost an unstoppable urge. It's almost, I can't imagine not doing it. Yeah? When I'm hungry, I eat. Yeah, when I'm cold, I put on more clothes. It's very basic. If I'm threatened, I do something about that threat. So rather than thinking in terms of having a high opinion of myself or even feeling happy, it's maybe easier and less complicated to just contact the sense of I care for myself, and that's there. Yeah, it's sort of inborn. The thing with having a high opinion of myself, it's so dependent. I mean, it's so unreliable. We have all sorts of opinions about ourselves during the day, depending on the weather, the food, whether somebody looked at us friendly or unfriendly, whether somebody said something or not. And we can sort of move from all sorts of thinking we're really a nice person and somebody says something, we think we shouldn't really be here and it's all a fraud. And sort of, yeah. It's sort of completely unreliable. Yeah, it's sort of, yeah, based on all sorts of influences. And maybe it's easier just to contact this inborn sense, I care for myself. Yeah. Just another thing I want to mention. You probably all heard or may have heard that it's only possible to love others if you love yourself, yeah? Apparently, that's highly questionable. I think in modern psychology, that idea is very questionable. That may not be true at all. So don't worry about it. It's a dogma which has its day, probably. And I think it just makes life more difficult if you think that. So first stage is come into contact with its self-cherishing. And do the first stage as short as necessary. If the first stage is difficult, I think prolonging it endlessly probably makes it worse. I mean, if you're sort of not at ease with yourself and you really try to sort of send yourself matter all the time, what I find usually just gets worse. Yeah. It may be better then to move to the next stage. If the first stage is difficult, move to the next one. Yeah, you don't have to sort of prolong it indefinitely. I mean, the way I think the first stage is described traditionally is you become aware of yourself as an example of a person who wants to be happy. And because you know what it's like to be a person with problems, difficulties, striving for happiness, you know what it's like. That is the basis for empathizing with others. Because you know what it's like to be a person. Yeah. You know what it's like to have problems, so you know what it's like for other people to have problems. So that's the basis of the first stage. Then come the other stages. Second stage, good friend. Yeah, we bring to mind the person, become aware of the person, we become aware of our response to the person. And a very simple way of doing the practice, you just, what I find is often enough, often I don't need to do more, just be aware of the person as somebody who strives for happiness, just like me, just being aware of that sort of equality between me and them. Often that's enough. Often I don't need to do more. You can do more, like bring the sentences in, maybe happy, maybe well, images, memories, whatever. But I think the basis is awareness of the other person as a living being. The same with the neutral person. Now with a neutral person, you do the same things. You bring the person to mind. You're aware of the fact they don't want to suffer, like I don't want to suffer, they strive for happiness, like I strive for happiness, and it's a basis for metta. A problem people have with the third stage person is that we don't know their likes and dislikes, we don't know their taste. That's not necessary. You don't need to know a lot about the person to assume they don't want to be ill, they don't want to have problems, they don't want to have pain, they want to be happy. Yeah. So it's not necessary to know too much, to know a lot about the person. Yeah, just be aware of them. The third stage is also a very good test for our ability for metta, because that's the stage where there's nothing in it for us. We want our friend to be happy, obviously, because they're a good friend. We want a difficult person to be happy, because then they're nicer to us. So we have an interest in an enemy being happy. But with a neutral person, it doesn't make any difference to us whether they're happy or not. Yeah. Sort of, it doesn't make any difference really to us. So that's a real test for our metta. Yeah. And also, the vast majority of people are neutral persons for us. So it's sort of a test for that in a way. Then comes the fourth stage, enemy or difficult person. So somebody we don't like, we find unpleasant, difficult, annoying, somebody you don't want around. And you do the same thing. You're aware of the person, you're aware of your response, and you notice in a certain way they're not much different from you. In all these stages, it's important to be honest with yourself. So the way I would do the practice, I'm going to practice this after I've talked, a short exercise about that. I can recommend spending each stage, 1 or 2 minutes, just to sit with a person and notice your response. Yeah. So notice your response to the friend before you do anything. Notice your response to the boring person before you do anything. Notice your response to the unpleasant person before you do anything. Yeah. Because otherwise what can happen, we can practice metta in a bit of an alienated way. Yeah. We can get a bit alienated in the metta bhavana. Sort of the bell goes, up pops the person, and there's metta. Yeah. And you don't actually know what you're feeling to the person. Yeah, so I can really recommend spending some time just being aware of your response. Yeah. So notice the liking for the friend, notice the boredom with the neutral person, how uninteresting they really are. Just notice how uninterested you can be in a person. And notice your hatred and aversion for the enemy. Just notice your unease around the person, how much you dislike them. Because that's why the metta bhavana is such an honest practice, yeah, sort of makes the conflict between the basic fact that you don't like a person, honestly, or find them boring. You don't deny that. But you bring that together with the reality that they strive for happiness. You sort of bring that together in a way, in the metta bhavana. And of course, your response may change, will change to the person. It will change. Maybe a bit more background. What we're doing in the practice with the second, third, and fourth stage person, we're training our ability to respond creatively to feelings. So there's three kinds of vedana: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Pleasant vedana means craving, usually. Unpleasant vedana, usually my response is aversion and hatred. Neutral vedana, my response is usually I'm disinterested in them. And this is what the three kinds of person represent. Yeah? There's a person where my usual response would be something like craving. There's a person where my usual response would be indifference. And the person where my usual response would be aversion. And we train ourselves in the metta bhavana not to give in to that. And we train ourselves to go beyond likes and dislikes. Just one on something on how to choose the persons. take people who are really belong into that stage at the moment. Then what can easily happen if you practice, do the practice long enough, you have your standard pool of friends, your standard pool of neutral persons, and your standard pool of enemies. And you sort of pick one. And it can be a bit uncreative. Yeah? So take a person who actually at the time of the meditation really belongs into the stage. So it could be a friend who annoys you at the moment, and then enemy. Yeah? So it could be people may move around between the stages sometimes. Yeah? So be honest in your choice of person. Yeah? Don't just go on automatic. I think it's important not just to go on automatic in the practice. Yeah? If for years and years of practice you always have the same people in the stages, you're probably on automatic. Yeah? Take a person which is really, who's really part of your life at the moment. Also, you noticed maybe that I use the term enemy for the enemy. This is on purpose. I know we should call them person I have difficulty with or whatever, but actually they're an enemy. What I mean by that is your immediate response before you even think, when you see the person, is enemy. It's actually physical or sometimes. Yeah? You don't want to be in the same room with the person. And then your sort of civilized self kicks in, you know, it's not an enemy, they don't harm me really. It's my own problems, it just shows me something about myself, you all know that. Yeah? But look at your first response, I don't like this person. And that's the honest response to you, sort of a psychologically honest response. It's a response before your civilized self kicks in, which, yeah, it's a bit sort of tamed, knows enough about psychology and sort of, yeah, before you meet, yeah.
I have a question. Choosing the person. Sometimes one likes to choose a person which one only knows from the media.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I would choose the person which is part of your life.
Of one's real life.
Yeah, of your physical surroundings. Yeah, I think it's more. Yeah, yeah.
I get really stuck with that one because I really genuinely don't have anybody who I can think of that I actually dislike anymore.
Okay. You can then look at your instinct when you enter a room, who you want to be near or far, how you choose, where you choose to sit in the dining room even, not on this table, rather that table. Don't tell the person, by the way. But there's an instinct, or just as of a neutral person who's a bit on the unpleasant edge. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I would choose persons from your real life, yeah.
How do you cope with the fact that you've got somebody there in the fourth stage who you simply run out of fuel with? You've got a nice buildup of metta for your best friend and yeah, neutral person, and there's such a drain on what goes on in stage four, you're turning this into an unpleasant practice.
Okay. Two answers. One is, if it's too difficult, choose a different person, where it's easier. I think that's the main thing, choose a person who's just mildly unpleasant. In a sense, what you do with the three stages, you want to train yourself. Let me see it that way. You want to train your ability to respond with metta to different kinds of people. And if it's somebody that's too difficult, the training won't help, won't work. So maybe see it that way. Yeah. The other thing is just when you sort of, maybe I'm not sure if that's what you meant, but I think there came a sort of battery image for metta, that we have a limited amount of metta available. And we have to sort of be careful with it. That's a model which I don't think works actually. Yeah, so you've got the battery image for metta. It's sort of quite like that. So you've got the different persons. And the way I would do the practice is really that the source of metta is always awareness of the other person, yeah, as a living being. Yeah. Then comes the final stage, which has these two parts to it. The first part, I think, was often called breaking the barriers, equalizing. You bring all four persons together, yourself, friend, enemy, neutral person, and develop the metta, the well-wishing for all four equally strong. In a way, what we do in this stage, we really go beyond likes and dislikes, but we still have a sort of quite limited or amount of people to deal with. As in the final stage, we have all beings. We still have a sort of fairly focused area of awareness, but we go beyond likes and dislikes. Yeah, bring all four persons together, metta for all four equally strong. Just how you do this. I do it almost sort of in an abstract way of having a sense of all four of us together. I don't create concrete situations where we are together. I think that just gets me distracted. You know, like having a meal together or something. I mean, some people do this thing. I find it distracting for myself. I mean, if you find it helpful, fine, do it. But don't become the victim of your own scenario. That's important. Yeah. So we spend some time having all four together. Metta for all four equally strong. In a sense here, metta goes beyond self, other, liking, disliking. I think this is a stage which, maybe it's because it's only the first part of the fifth stage, I think many of us, I mean, I'm guilty of that, do that too briefly. We skip over that too quickly, I think. It's actually worth giving that more time. Yeah. I can't explain why it works, but if I do it thoroughly, I can get quite concentrated in that stage. I can't give you the theory behind it, but that's usually what happens for me. I get very concentrated. And then comes the final stage, the expansion. I mean, there's different models of doing this, of geography method, of people in the room, and so on, in the village, in the town surrounding, and so on. You can do different methods. The main point is to get a sense of expansiveness. And including more and more beings. The way to think about that is metta has a natural tendency to expand. So rather than pushing metta throughout the universe, which is just exhausting, it's more allow the natural, it's more don't stand in the, I mean, the way I like to see metta in the final stages, stop standing in the way of matter. It's not that you have to push matter, you just have to sort of take off the brakes. It's the only thing we need to do, is take off the brakes or pull them away and allow matter to expand. So let's go with this natural sense of expansiveness in matter. I mean, maybe two basic attitudes to matter, and I've heard both, I think both are true. I think it's good to have a sort of confident attitude that if you've got a human mind, you can do the metta bhavana. I think we all, I mean, if you've got a human, if you're able to like, I mean, you all know what it's, we all can like somebody. I mean, it's not alien to us really. Yeah? So if we can do that, we can do the metta bhavana. Yeah? It's good to have a sort of confident attitude in that. I mean, if you've got a human mind, you can do the metta bhavana. At the same time, it's useful, it's very important to be open to the fact that there's more to metta than we currently understand. Yeah? We never master the metta bhavana. There's always more to it. Sometimes it's sort of put as a slogan, we don't really know what metta is. I think it's true, but maybe leaving it there may not be helpful because it may be discouraging. Yeah? But just being open to the fact, like with any practice actually, yeah, there's always more to the practice, more dimensions to the practice than we currently understand. It's just useful to be open to the possibility. Another thing about working with the practice is the, you probably heard about that, there's the teaching of the near and far enemies. So each positive emotion has a far enemy, which is its obvious opposite, and the so-called near enemy, which looks similar, but is actually fundamentally selfish. So the near enemy of metta is hatred. It's very obvious. The far enemy is hatred. Yeah, it's obvious. Now, the near enemy of metta is sort of something called sticky affection, or sentimental love. What a near enemy, how you would define the near, and all positive emotions have near and far enemies, they have all near enemies, if you go through all of them. Maybe as a general principle to define or to describe what a near enemy is a state where your feeling is more interesting than the other person. When you're more in love with your own metta than with your than concerned about the other person's welfare. Yeah? So it's an emotion with a stronger self, it's a selfish element in it. Yeah? Another way it's sometimes described, you want the pleasure of the emotion without paying the price. Yeah? So paying the price for metta would actually to be more ethical and other regarding in your actions. Yeah? The near enemy would be you just sort of revel in your own goodness and the compassion you feel for all beings, but it's enough, you don't do anything. Yeah? So you're not prepared to pay the price for it. That's another definition of it. Now, practically speaking, I strongly suspect that most of our metta bhavana, if you're really honest, has a strong near enemy flavor to it, or a more or less stronger selfish element to it. Actually, I sometimes even wonder, but this is Brahma Vihara Chit, don't know which one it was last year or year before. When I just looked at the way I meditate, and I thought, actually, to be really honest, I'm mainly doing near enemy bhavana. So what I'm trying to get at with this is the near enemy. It's good to know the distinction between the real thing, complete selfless metta, and the near enemy. So where you're sort of also concerned about your own feelings and you find that interesting. It's good to be clear about the distinction. In practice, our metta bhavana, there will probably be quite a selfish element in it. So don't panic about that. It's more a question of working on it. So the selfish element in the metta bhavana is our working ground. Yeah. So when we come to the friend stage, well, we like them because they're nice to us. And we want them to be happy because then they're even nicer to us. That's not metta. Strictly speaking, this is not metta. However, we can't avoid it. Yeah, so don't panic if you find some selfish element. Just sort of work on that selfish element in your practice. Okay, so that's on the practice. So yeah, with the stages, just to go through this, just so how I would work on the stages, and I will lead through it a bit. So first stage, be aware of your self-cherishing, your self-care, the fact you're important to yourself. Then come the other stages. In each stage, what I would do is, between each stage, come back to metta in yourself. Yeah, so friend stage is over. Friend dissolves, back to matter in yourself, neutral person. So don't jump hastily from person to person. Also, it's useful to begin each stage with some moments, a minute or two, just sit with the person and be aware of your response before you come with matter. So that's how I would do the practice. I think some of the described ones, the fourth stage, is there's this unpleasant person and you hammer them with metta until they're quiet. I think it's how often we do the metta bhavana, sort of shut up. So it's more sitting with the person, be aware of them and just responding with friendliness.